Welcome to TVI episode 169.
169.
The King of Edinburgh.
The Queen is dead. Long live the King.
Long Vittorio. Live King Vittorio
returns.
Hello.
TVI is so hot, even our producer gets nominated.
Everything
we're on fire.
Everything we touch turns to gold. Apart from our personal lives. Which they turn to shit. The moment you left for Edinburgh, our lives fell apart.
TVI is such so hot right now.
Anyway, welcome back to the hot desk.
The King is back.
Obviously, we'll talk. I mean, there's big things to talk about this week on this week's episode. Vittorio's triumph in Edinburgh. The Queen dying is obviously another thing we'll probably cover. And anything else? That's mainly the big things, isn't it?
Yeah.
Any other big news? There's been no other news,
what
has there?
The
I mean, there is loads of
How's
news.
How's the war going?
Oh, that's this going well, apparently. Oh.
Yeah, apparently Ukraine are about to fucking smash it.
Yeah, oh, so...
Russia are retreating.
They were just waiting. The Queen dying's really giving them that lift. So he's pumped them up. But yeah, we'll get into all this. Let's talk. But actually, I'll tell you what. We got you a little gift, Vittorio.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I bought you a bottle of champagne.
Oh, fuck
there
off.
We go.
Oh.
To celebrate your victorious debut Edinburgh show.
You got to drink it now.
You got to down it. And then tell us who's a cunt in Edinburgh. imagine that.
Yeah.
It's no.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you. That's really kind.
Right. No worries, mate. It was very, it was nice to, you know, because it's that thing where I was you're obviously out of the loop from Edinburgh when you're not there, but even more so this year because I wasn't really paying attention to it. I had
stuff
more things going on. But it was that nice thing where every now and again when I would engage, open Twitter, have a look around, you know, it was nice to see yourself doing very well. There was other nice people like Jordan Gray.
Yeah.
You know, I gigged with Jordan a few times probably in the last 6 months and like she literally took the place apart. Like I remember like, I had to follow her at a gig in Essex in a festival-y gig. And I just watched literally people on their feet and I was like, this is different, isn't it? Because obviously it's musical and it's big and it's, you know, but and
gets
so.
The Bristols out as well.
So, yeah. Bristols. I've not heard that in about 25 years.
Yeah, Bristol City.
So it's nice to see names doing well that I was like, oh, that's, you know, it's good to see nice people doing well.
Sean Walsh nomination.
And obviously Walsh. Right? It was.
Yeah, man.
It's a lovely sort of redemption. I know it sounds weird to even say it like
but
that.
It is.
I was really pleased, man. Yeah.
Because obviously his last, that Kiss
special. Not as pleased
special,
as if it was me, but.
Because the irony is the show he did, Kiss, which obviously it wasn't called Kiss when it was in Edinburgh, was it? I can't remember, was it?
It wasn't, but I can't remember what it was called.
But that was such a brilliant show, but he hated doing it so much. Yeah. He was still going right through it.
Yeah. Mm.
And like, but it was genuinely one of the best shows. You know, it was probably the best show I saw that Fringe. Very personal, with Sean really going into it. And you know, because he's always done observational stuff that is sort of about his life. But he sort of kept his life a bit at arm's length, hasn't he? So I'd see him using them skills he's got to dive into being personal.
It was great, wasn't it? Yeah.
That was brilliant. And then I think this one is like, you know, he's taken that sort of newfound sort of area he's inhabiting.
Yeah.
And he's gone fucking right into it. So it was excellent to see him. And also to be doing a personal show that also he felt happy being up there and doing it.
Yes.
That was a lovely thing to see. So, yeah, it was nice. It wasn't just a series of wankers.
getting critical acclaim. Mm.
But that was another thing. Like, I don't read reviews when I'm up there. Mm. But, you know, you still see them everywhere. You see 4 stars, 5 stars on posters. Yeah. When you're not there and you don't read reviews, you literally have no idea what's going on.
Mm.
I was reading
the reviews. And
were you?
Yeah.
Ah, why?
I don't know. Every August, I just click on it, and just have a little butchers.
But do you read them to sort of... See, oh, that's
I don't.
Nice
I don't
review.
Actually
do
read,
read
the whole thing. I'm more. If it's someone I know, I'll read it.
Right.
Or I'll look at this. I don't know. I definitely have a look every day.
What was the caliber of review this year? Good, bad.
I don't know. What do you mean? Like, was there?
Were
a
they
lot...
well written? Were they badly informed? Yeah, I'd never know.
There's a couple of real nasty ones.
Can we name?
I find them quite biased to their if the reviewer agrees with their opinion.
Yeah.
That's right. What seems to be the vibe.
Yeah.
Not are they funny or not.
No, they...
Are they politically on the same side as the reviewer?
It'd be like reviewing a restaurant and being like, well, I don't like chicken.
Or a
vegan reviewing the fucking Aberdeen Angus steakhouse.
Exactly.
That's not for me.
That's not the job, is it? I wouldn't have thought. It's not journalism.
But I do think they have to put a bit of opinion in it. They're not just robots. I will say, I've always been like, you know, it's like when you read, weirdly, I read your theatre review because you read the Metro on the tube or something. And I think theatre reviewers often do that thing of, you know, they obviously have more to work with as well. They've got production and they've got, you know, it's a cast. They can individually review cast. So they have to talk about the actual production and then they can talk about their opinion of the show. So they, I suppose, have a slightly easier job than comedy, whereas most comedy shows are just basically a person on stage talking. So I do think it leaves it more up to the opinion of the reviewer. So I do think comedy reviewing is more biased and more...
But I think they can lose a star if they're not aligned with the same political ideologies.
That's the reviewership that holds power by being a reviewer. I don't mean power, but I mean that's their prerogative, isn't it?
It depends, I suppose, what comedy, an Edinburgh show is supposed to be.
But if you don't like that, you be a reviewer then. That's my thinking. That's why I don't read reviews, because I think the moment you start you're giving them more...
I got
Wait,
very upset
you actually...
by my first one. I got very upset by, and who it was the three.
It was who was it by?
Scotsman Jay Richardson,
right?
And
four stars Julian Dennis.
in hindsight, he was right about a lot of stuff, and that stuff improved over the first week. And he saw it on day two,
right? Yeah, yeah.
I did say he could because you just want to get them in,
yeah.
And I previewed it loads, but like a lot of that stuff really ironed itself out
in
the first week. Like, because I remember you said to me before I went up, you were like,
don't go.
Oh, it...
don't do that show you're doing, hey.
Oh, you're doing that. Have you paid for the venue and all that?
But you were like, it'll change over the first week.
Oh, yeah.
Loads. And I was like,
first week is where it changes more than the last five previews. Like, everything just goes, that goes there, that goes there.
I added a line on the last day. Like, I was constantly working on it. And like, in hindsight, it probably was a 3-star show when he saw it. But I think there was so much tension about what that first review was.
Yeah.
You got it down to 2 at the end, did you? Yeah. I read like a 1.
That's what I mean. I think I think people sort of toss and turn about, but they're taking a star off because of this or that. And I think if you're going to read it, you've got to accept that's their opinion.
All it is.
And don't mean nothing, ultimately.
I do accept it's their opinion. I just think that they're wrong.
Yeah, that's fine.
But that's what was interesting and helpful with that is in the same batch of reviews that he did, there was people who he reviewed really well that I'd seen the show and was like, I didn't think that was great.
Yeah.
And you just, like, that clarified.
He's generally okay, I think.
I know, he seems like a good guy, but I was just like, it is just his opinion because I disagree about that.
Yeah.
That's only because he gave me a good review. Like, if he hadn't, you know what I mean? It's so
spot on.
It's funny when you hate someone. Like, I did it the other day. I was like, slagging someone off. They were like, he was saying how much he really liked you. Yeah, he's all right, actually. Genuinely, like, he's a good guy. He's a good guy.
My least favorite in reviews is when they just tell the whole story of the show.
Or when they just actually put a punchline in.
They did that.
That's what I heard a few people this year. I don't know what reviews it was.
The very experienced reviewers.
A few people were doing, like, you know, don't put actual jokes in the review.
Jay did that in mine. It wasn't like the actual point, but it was the whole premise.
It's weird they do that.
It was like, he's experienced; he should know better.
Than to quote
a joke.
But then the ones who just go like, and then they talked about this, and then they talked about this, and then I'm like, why? That's not what you're supposed to be doing.
Maybe he'll be looking back over them early reviews. He was like, it was early in the Fringe. I was messing up. like you're doing. By the end of the Fringe, he was up in his stride. He wasn't putting jokes in.
Someone should review the reviewers as well.
Yeah. Me and Chris Martin once did a end of festival 2-night live show called We Review the Reviews. And we got, it was us and a comedian. and a reviewer going through the best and worst reviews of the month, like the funniest, the harshest. And it was me, Chris, and one night we had Acaster and Julia Chamberlain. And another
she
night
she gave me a nice one. Not I don't have a bad word to say about her.
Well, I mean, I'm very good friends with
yeah,
Julia.
Yeah, it was good.
But this was probably before me and Julia became friends.
Yeah.
But her and Acaster had a real ding dong because she was reviewing for Chortle that year. I think Chortle, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. But basically, she had been she'd been quite critical of quite a lot of shows.
Yeah.
And then Acaster said, like, "What's the best stuff you've seen this festival?" And she said, "To be honest, I've not really enjoyed a lot of comedy this year. I've been enjoying more theatre." And Acaster was like, "Well, if that's the headspace you're working in at this festival, that's not fair on the comedians. Just stop reviewing comedy then and go and see theatre, because obviously that's currently what you're into." And they had a bit of a ding dong, but the other night was Kate Copstick and fucking I can't remember the comedian we had in the hot seat. But it was really fun. It was quite. We just thought it'd be a laugh, and it ended up being quite heated,
quite aggy,
because we were just reading out funny quotes from bad reviews and stuff. But yeah, it was a fun idea actually. Maybe it's something to be rehashed next year.
Yeah, Bennett gave someone a really nasty one this year, though.
Did he? Who was it?
Unfair. It was for Patrick Spicer, who's great.
So I know I've met Patrick Spicer.
He's great.
Was he doing a debut? Because he's newish.
I don't know if it was his debut, but he might be one of those that would have debuted in the past because he's been going a little bit longer than me. But
I could have been pre-COVID, but I think he'd sort of felt like he'd been one of the newer crop.
And he's really kicked on, and he's brilliant. But he just. Bennett just tore into him for being like, "Oh, he's standard like t-shirt white male comic talking about therapy and anxiety."
What's he want him to wear? A suit of armor?
He was like,
of course, everyone wears t-shirts.
And he was like, "Anyone else's bingo card full yet?" When he was talking about the topics he was covering, I'm like,
"Right,
it's not about necessarily like he's just talking about his life."
What topics were those?
So like having anxiety, going to therapy,
right?
Masculinity, stuff that would affect a young man.
Yeah, I suppose. That's
what I mean with hit that reviewer, though. Like,
and I suppose that is the problem. That's not the comedian's problem as such. That's the zeitgeist problem. Yeah. It's the problem that, the world is affecting everyone the same now. Because the world is like a fucking globalized monolith. That's a issue with society, not on the comedian.
It's not so relatable to people in the audience, isn't it? Like,
you've just got grape juice.
I know.
Oh, fuck.
Very sexy.
Looks like you've been bleeding, mate.
These red tings are nice.
Yeah, they're nice, aren't they? Do you want a grape?
I would love a grape.
Yeah. Have a couple. I've got a mixed bit bunch this episode. But yeah, that's a funny one. That I do find.
Where if it's kind of a certain subject that's like the topic of the day.
But they are the topics of the day, aren't they? I thought everyone's wanking on about ADHD and stuff like that now. I thought everyone.
Yeah. For him to say white man as well, like.
Yeah, but there was a really...
Not that I'm fucking like...
But also, and this is again, I'm saying this to somebody who hasn't read the review, I don't know what the standard form was, but I don't think Bennett should... If you're just... It's like Bennett saying there's another white male comedian doing this.
It's another white man reviewing.
That's the equivalent of like people that move into like white middle class professionals moving to Brixton and going, "Oh my God, man, it's so white round here now, isn't it?" It's like, you fucking call that, you wanker.
It's like when an audience member comes up and goes, "Oh, tough crowd." You're like... You!
You fucking donut.
Sitting there staring at me the whole fucking set.
They're a bit weird, aren't they?
What? You were them.
Yeah. That's it's the classic sort of, I don't think Bennett would be doing it consciously, but it's like a little, you're trying to parry away the criticism that you're a middle class white bloke.
It just means the race is constantly on his mind as well. So isn't he by default a little bit racist, looking around judging people by colour?
No, but I'm not even thinking about it.
If he's judging a white guy, then that means he's judging the guy's black as well. You know what I mean?
He's seeing
it everywhere.
Yeah, of course, because he's a middle class white person in art criticism. You know what I mean? He is ultimately.
Put that out.
He's probably hyper aware of these things. He doesn't realise he is, but...
It's because he's trying hard, because really, his internal monologue is chatting racist shit all the time. So he has to point the finger outside.
All he ever hears in his head is black guy, Indian guy.
Yeah.
It's just noise constant. Yeah,
that's true. So he has to point the finger outside and tell other people what's, you know what I mean?
I don't know if that's true. I just think it is that thing of anyone in the arts... you know, like especially, you know, if you're a middle class reviewer, you know, you work in criticism. That's the most middle class job in the world.
But they don't like calling themselves critics, do they? They prefer reviewer.
Well, they can call themselves what they want. I don't know what the official right word is.
Yeah. I've only had good reviews off him, by the way. But so yeah. I've got no but dog I
just,
in the fire.
I just think, yeah, it is that they constantly are trying to see everything in the context of everything. So I think again that is part of the problem with the landscape rather than them as individuals.
Yeah,
they see they almost feel like they have to mention it in the context of what's going on, rather than just go in and see.
But the
like,
only thing going on is
all that matters
people...
is this 1 hour. Let's watch it in like it's impossible for them to see it.
Well, that's why all that like meta anti-comedy gets reviewed really well towards the end of the Fringe because the reviewers are sick of stand-up.
That's a good like, observation.
Yeah. So stuff that comments on stand-up because they're like just submerged in stand-up the whole
time. Yeah.
So somebody going, hey, isn't it weird when stand-ups do this? They're like, yes, I've been watching that all month. But it's not actually relatable.
But there is,
to the
I mean, like, yeah, I suppose. It's that funny thing with like certain anti-comedy and, you know, I do think I'm always super suspicious of anti-comedy unless it's done really well. So someone like Sam Campbell is a good example of somebody who does it well.
Because he can do comedy.
Yeah. Sometimes you see somebody doing anti-comedy and you're like, you're doing this because you can't do comedy.
Yeah. You know? Like, you can't do funny comedy.
But with someone like Sam, yeah, he's fucking just funny. He's got funny bones.
Well, it's like I think Picasso had to prove that he could draw a person that looked like a person.
Yeah. Have you ever read? There's a really good book called Why Your 5-Year-Old Couldn't Do That.
And it's about modern art?
Yeah, and it's just, all it does is go through all the most contentious pieces of modern art, right from the, you know, the sort of the porcelain urinal, that famous one.
And like Tracy Emin's
through the, like everything like that. And it just talks you through the criticism from people that would be like, it's just a fucking unmade bed, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I could have done that. And then, obviously it starts with the concept that obviously you didn't do that. And then it takes you through the actual, the work of the artist before, the stuff they've done after, the context they did it in, what they were planning and what they were trying to say with it. And it just takes you through the fact that the amount of thought that went into what they what you see as just a nice fucking unmade bed.
Yeah.
You know, is actually...
Remind me not to read that book. Just in case I go to by accident.
But it's a really good little...
It's
a good coffee table book.
Yeah. Guys.
But yes,
I had a really, talking about that like zeitgeist of Edinburgh, I had a really funny and bizarre conversation with Ed Byrne, because Ed Byrne essentially came up to the Fringe for 2 days to watch all the shows.
And the zeitgeist of the year was his brother.
Dead brother.
Like there must have been four or five shows.
Six.
So what?
John
Keyworth,
Hastings, Larry Dean. And there was he said he was up seeing six. I think there was six about.
Wow.
And those are the only shows that he saw.
I'm going to do a show anti Paul Byrne shows. Just to clarify, Paul was actually a good mate of mine. And I loved the guy. But it'd be funny just to do one. Imagine doing an hour about how much of a fucking hated Paul Byrne. He'd lead and loved it.
Oh, yeah.
That'd have been his favourite show.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I mean, it was fascinating to like, you think, because people don't really, again, it's so meta and in filler comedy. No one outside of comedy would have known Paul was like so crucial behind the scenes for so many comedians over the years, not just obviously this year, but countless comedians over the years.
Well, Ed was saying next year he's going to be such a hack because he's going to be talking about getting diagnosed with ADHD and Paul Byrne dying.
Mate, come on, it's not 2022, mate.
How did he die? Alcohol.
It was but it was a long history of alcohol related issues and other things, and he'd been ill.
He was supposed to direct my show.
Was he?
Yeah, and then he didn't. And I had a plan.
You got 3 stars at the top, mate.
I thought what he would find the funniest is if I did win to go up and be like, you know, Paul Byrne was supposed to direct this.
Yeah.
Didn't fucking need him anyway. That would just be like so Paul to do that. But like,
It's interesting. But who was the other newcomers? What was the
Josh Jones got nominated.
Well, just to clarify for any listeners overseas who don't follow the Edinburgh Fringe, we've just been talking about this for so long. Victoria got nominated for Best Newcomer.
Hey!
Who was the other ones?
Josh Jones.
Oh, I know Josh. He's a nice guy. I did a lovely weekend in, I think Nottingham with Joel, or maybe Birmingham. We did a nice weekend at Glee late last year. We had a lovely weekend of just having a few beers.
He's
lovely,
great.
He's good company.
He's a good hang. Yeah. Josh, Emmanuel Sanubi.
Emmanuel, yep.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy as well, actually.
Emily Wilson, who's an American lady. She, I think she's very good friends with like Kat Cohen, who came over. I think I haven't seen it, but she's very nice. But and her show, I think, was about she went on the X Factor as a kid.
Oh, right, okay.
And about like
that'd be funny.
All that stuff.
Yes.
Who else got nominated for best? Lara Ricotte, who won?
She's somebody told me they saw her show, and she's like super charismatic. Like they said, like she's like one of the most sort of
she has this amazing,
innate, funny,
like, silly, goofy, yes, that's what like, they,
that's,
really
that's, the, that's the way they described it to me, which I really like the sound of.
And what I really liked, and apparently I couldn't bring myself to watch anyone else's debut because I thought it would like freak me out too much. But what I've heard about Lara, and also in one of the interviews when she won, she said, it's really great that this has felt like a really thorough process because I'm so used to being like Mexican and hard of hearing. Like I get a lot of stuff just to tick a box, but this feels like I actually earned it. Which is really nice of her to like acknowledge that in that way and be like, I'm sick of people using me as like a token. X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's a good point. That's exactly my point I was making about the reviewer, isn't
it? She just worded it way better.
She just worded it clearly and concisely.
Amy Gledhill nominated for a newcomer.
I've never seen her do stand up, but I went to watch The Delightful Sausage.
Well, they got nominated for best show.
I know, that's great. But I saw their show at Soho Theatre. And it was very funny.
And what
very
about
silly.
not the newcomer, the main one who
Alfie Brown, which I was chuffed about.
Yeah,
really,
good.
Really.
I mean, he's sort of, you know, he's been
Jordan won that, yeah?
No.
No.
Sam won that. Sam Campbell.
What happened with Jordan then?
Nominated.
For newcomer. No, for
main award.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Was that because I didn't know Jordan had done a show before then, or was it? Or did she just jump?
I think she'd done like music shows and like a few different things, and she's had like a TV show. I think there was a couple things that
pushed her into the main.
She did TVI last year, didn't she?
that does push
that
you
does exclude you from the newcomer. You can't unless you're behind the desk. Sean,
Alfie, Sean. Jordan, who else is nominated for best? Delightful Sausage.
Yes.
Oh, flip me.
Larry. Yes.
Larry Dane.
Yeah.
Oh,
nice. It's a nice bunch.
It is good.
That's a bunch of guys.
Donuts.
It was me and Alfie were like essentially drinking buddies for the whole fringe as well. So it was dead nice.
He loves a beard.
Oh, Alfie was the most boozed up I've ever seen.
But he always
does
it. He does it every in this Melbourne. Like, he's just out every night. He's one of these like comedians that just has that
alcoholism.
Yeah. but you know, I used to be able to do it, but now I just don't think I could do it every night. I've not got it in me.
I think he has so many kids that when he's away,
and I suppose they weren't with him, were they?
They came up for a weekend.
Yeah,
and he took them to see a couple of shows, and I was like, "Oh, are you taking them to anything tomorrow?" And he was like, "The train station."
Yeah.
how many kids does Alfie have?
Four.
I didn't know he had four kids.
Yeah.
Bumba Clark.
And all you know within like 6 years, 7 years. I think they. I don't know. Donnie, his oldest one, is can't be that old.
Yeah, Donnie, Margot, can't remember them.
And he lives in Manchester, does he?
No,
he lives in London.
Yeah,
does he?
Yeah.
He lived in Manchester for a while, or Liverpool.
I don't think he just goes to Liverpool a lot.
Oh.
Yeah, he's a big Liverpool fan. Yeah. His mum's from Liverpool.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. His mum, yeah. His mum was an actress, wasn't she?
Impersonator, actress.
Jan Ravens.
Yeah.
Famous.
Spitting Image.
Spitting Image does all the other ones. Other ones, I don't know what it is. What's that one with Rory Bremner in that?
Rory Bremner show.
Is that basically the one of the last 20 years that's done? Dead Ringers.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
I used to love a bit of Spitting Image.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, even though I didn't really understand the politics.
They brought it back.
They tried to bring it back. Yeah. And even I've got mates that
voice Ford
stuff
was doing
and
it,
write on it. But you know, I'm not criticising them, but I just don't think that concept works nowadays.
Well, John O'Farrell who launched it when it first started. I sometimes play in a football match with him, and he's like, "Yeah, it's not great what they've done with that."
I think the show could be great, but I think it's more the time that we. Like,
it was of its time.
Yeah, who's going to watch puppets now do comedy? Yeah. I feel like just the world's moved on from that. People want just, I don't know. I can't imagine young people being like, "Oh, I want to watch that puppet comedy show."
And were young people watching it when the first one?
Yeah, in primary school.
But yeah, but it, with the first one, it was satirical.
Really? I was, yeah.
Yeah, I was used to watch it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no, so yeah, that's what I mean. Like, it was political and it was, you know, it was all, it felt quite anti-establishment.
You still laugh at it, though, like Prince Charles. I suppose it was a bit of novelty then, wasn't it? Like,
it was a novelty, but it also felt very satirical and anti-establishment. So you sort of felt like, yeah, this is fucking having a go at everyone. Whereas I don't know if, yeah, I don't know if now young people are going to be like, where they're going to watch their satire is going to be.
Well, because there's so much more you can get away with on YouTube and all those. Well,
exactly. People just, that, yeah.
That's what I think about panel shows as well. Like those Sidemen and KSI and all, like they're not as funny as comedians, but they're more like let off the leash.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
comedians
yeah.
on Mock the Week.
I have never seen the Sidemen. I've just seen that name mentioned on.
Very funny guys.
Right. And what do they do? What
just
is
like
it?
Guys hanging out.
KSI,
like they do
Jake Paul.
KSI, I only know because.
The boxing?
Does some box? I saw a boxing tweet.
I saw a football match between the YouTubers and the Sidemen at the Charlton Football Ground years ago. That was
Stephen.
They've been around for years, but a couple of them were like 35 or something.
Yeah.
Like my son must have been about 12 or something. Mm. He was like
I need to watch some of this YouTube. Everyone's going on about
KSI. Yeah, but it was good. They sold out the stadium.
Well, they're so much bigger than TV.
Yeah. Oh, they're like, huge. They sold out Charlton Football Ground.
Yeah.
Charlton don't sell out Charlton Football Ground.
That's such a funny way to put it.
I let him pitch jump on the pitch. Like he was like, oh please. I was like, all right. And I filmed it. And you see my son run down, he jumped over and he like dodged around the steward.
And he'd run. Did he get rugby tackled?
Got trampled.
No. It weren't the only one who did it.
Oh, right.
Like there was a few doing it. And
he wasn't a streaker.
And I was like, go on then.
Get your willy out.
I said to him, have your phone, because I lost him, obviously. And then he had to ring me and meet up. It was funny. Yeah, I got it on. It was funny the way he just dodged around the steward. The steward's trying to catch him.
That's so
and his
funny.
Dad's there filming.
Very funny of like a kid. Sidestepping a grown man.
Yeah.
Very
good. He was fast as well. I was proud.
Nice. We're taking Twyla to Disney World, to Disneyland Paris.
Oh, nice. She'll love it.
I mean, I'm going to love it. I never got to go to Disneyland.
Twyla? Wow.
She's 2 1/4.
She's going to love it, isn't she?
She'll fucking love it.
Is she a bit young, do you reckon, to appreciate?
Maybe, but she loves
the
like,
money. That is...
But she's obsessed with Mickey Mouse. Oh. She loves Dumbo. She loves sort of
I love Dumbo.
Mermaid.
Dumbo's like my...
I'd never seen
it's
Dumbo.
It's a bit sad, that cartoon, though, isn't it?
It's so sad.
Very sad.
Yeah, initially, and then obviously it's nice at the end. But it's not really, because he just has to work in a circus. But let's not get into that.
Happy ending, getting that cage. Big head cunt.
But I'd never seen Dumbo until I watched it with Twyla about 6 months ago.
I had a little Dumbo toy from when I was born. Ooh. And when I get I still have
isn't it a bit racist with the crows?
Oh man,
I
mean it's definitely
problematic.
They do have a warning now at the start. It does warn you.
Reflects the views of the time.
Yes.
It reflected the views of the whites at the time.
It didn't reflect
the views of everyone at the time.
It's true. Yes. But yeah, it's all that she loves, all those old Disney's. Some of them, we haven't ventured into some of the more mature ones, like, you know, we haven't got to like Aladdin or anything. But she loves Lion King, actually.
Never seen Lion King.
Oh, it's a good one. That's one of my favourite. That was my first ever Disney film I watched when 14 years old. I'd never watched a Disney film when I was young. Wow. My parents were bad at being parents. so I had to sort of catch up. So now that's why I'm going to be well excited to go to Euro Disney.
I went to Disney Orlando when I was very, very young, I felt so, Eeyore looked so sad that I went and gave him a hug. And I was terrified of the Little Mermaid.
Yep. Why? Because there's a new Little Mermaid out
now.
Was
she fit?
Yeah.
It's causing controversy.
Because she's black.
Yeah.
Is that
some
what it is?
People
yeah, some people
seem
don't
to
like
find
that.
It's weird that they've made a mermaid, not white.
Oh, I saw it got like a million
old girl
dislikes.
Who's half fish. The issue they're stressing about is the fact that the half that isn't fish
should
isn't
be a
white
fish.
What? Some people are fucking idiots, man.
Well, it's the same with like the new Lord of the Rings series. Everyone's like, elves aren't black.
Elves aren't real.
Elves aren't real, homeboy. Dragons aren't black.
So weird. People are so nerds are so fucking weird, aren't they?
It's like that. Not Downton Abbey. What was the big
Bridgerton?
Oh, there was black people in that.
Yeah.
And people were kicking off, weren't they?
Right.
There weren't black people around then.
But isn't? Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's Bridgerton. I presume is not a
It's not accurate, historically accurate.
Historical no. documentation at the times.
Be it's like a farce and like a...
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I thought it was based on true story, no?
Well, no, it's like based on a true period of time, but it's all very like heightened. They're all fucking...
People should shut up, though. Why did I
people should shut up.
I mean, that's my thoughts, exactly.
Why did I care?
I know. It's just people... It's just people... I don't know if... Do they care?
No.
Or is it just fucking people just bored and... want to have a ding dong online.
What was really nice, there's like a compilation of videos of young kids watching the trailer for the new Little Mermaid, and when the young black girls watch it, they're like, oh my god, she looks like me. Like that's the most wholesome like set of videos ever. And I'm like,
but the little white kids are like, what's this shit?
Boo! Boo! They're like sound like Millwall fans.
Good,
that's the point in it, isn't it? To kind of let people identify.
See themselves in it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just think it's such a weird thing to kick off about when we're literally like every other Disney princess forever. As being fucking.
There was that one frog. The one with the frog, the princess and the frog, she was black.
I've not seen
that. Oh, fuck that. That's too far, man.
Fucking frog cadaver, mate.
Dipsy from the Teletubbies, he was black.
And also, obviously, Pocahontas. But then that's, I mean, the story Lenny of Pocahontas Henry. Is actually really, the true story Mulan's of Pocahontas is really bad. Yeah, so there was this little wave of ones that came, but before that, it was literally just.
Wide,
honky wide, central,
just
wasn't
pure
it?
Honky. Wide.
So I just think it's so weird. People now go, "Well, you can't put a fucking black." And it's like, just you know, it's nice, mate.
Yeah. It's for the
young
viewers, isn't it?
Have someone represent them on screen.
And even the
just not on my watch, yeah. just
you're
not just gonna, what
you only watch the old white ones.
Yeah, only watch the old black and white minstrel show. Wizard of Oz.
What was the old what was the one the racist sitcoms like Alf Garnett and all that? It's got it on the loop. I've got some Alf Garnett albums. Have I told you about this? When my uncle died when I was 15, my uncle Keith. I don't know why I said his name like that. But but he we cleared out his place and he had loads of old vinyls
before he died.
And no one else wanted them. And obviously I was 15 and into music, so I didn't because there was loads of cool like rock
your
ones
DJ
and Motown and stuff like that. And in amongst the sort of the stack of rock and Motown and sort of Atlanta soul, there was some racially problematic vinyls, like the Black and White Minstrel Show.
Yeah.
Like Alf Garnett sort of he tells it east like sort of so I've just got this like I think there's about three
character
or four
Alf Garnett
it was yeah it was taking the piss out of that but I think some people then latched onto it as
like it's like Al Murray
but so I've got like three or four of these records in amongst my records that sort of if somebody was skipping through like this is cool and there's like Black and White Minstrel. It's purely a yeah, it's a
homage.
Well, it's not even a homage. It's just sort of weird. I don't know how to.
It's weird that
it belonged to my uncle.
It's weird that you framed those ones and put them on the wall.
Yeah, put them in my
your front door,
in my basement with all my Nazi memorabilia. no, but it's but they're just a memory of my racist uncle.
R.I.P. The true king.
We haven't talked about the dead queen. We're getting towards the end of the public bit.
Talk
about the dead queen.
Talk about our WhatsApp group as well.
We will talk about the WhatsApp group.
It was nice to hear there was nice messages. It was nice just getting
nice messages.
Yeah, people on our WhatsApp group were talking about your show.
Loads of people came to see it and were like, oh, you're that guy who's in the background of TVI.
Nice, lovely. But quickly, who were you gigging last weekend? During the period of Queen,
I was opening for Dan Nightingale in Nantwich.
Okay,
and what the Civic?
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, they asked us to not talk about it, and I
said no.
Well, no, I could only because the two guys that run the gig there at the Civic Hall, we were like, we don't want to lose them.
Was it Mike?
Mike and John,
yes.
Is that their name?
Yeah.
Really nice guys.
Lovely.
I haven't done the gig, but it's like supposed to be really, really nice.
Yeah, it's great.
And it's been around for ages, and we were like, look, it was actually, in a way, more fun to get on and be like, the venue have told us not to.
Yeah.
And She seemed like a nice woman.
Because I did the, so I was at the Comedy Store, but I was actually meant to be at the Comedy Store on the Thursday. They cancelled the show very last minute.
Yes, this is interesting.
Because I was en route. I'd left my house. I started walking down towards the tube station. My wife called me, said they've announced it. She's dead, and So I was like, okay. So I quickly just then messaged the Comedy Store. I was like, what's happening? Because we knew she was dead. We were just waiting to announce
you guys must have like some journalist friends. All mine texted me going, we've all been called into emergency meetings.
I got a couple of messages saying like, she's definitely...
Were they waiting for Harry to get there?
I think they were just, waiting for the family to be for a united front. But it was an interesting one because I'm an absolute Republican, anti-monarchist. But I do have that weird thing where I didn't mind the Queen as a nice old lady.
I thought she was lovely. Yeah.
So when my wife said she was dead, a part of me was like, oh, that's sad. Even though I then hope that it does begin the end of the monarchy.
I think it might because there's so much less goodwill for Charles.
Absolutely. And the fact that now there's talk that he's going to bring Andrew back into the fold and put him back on royal duty and stuff. Which, you know, that is...
That'll really fuck them.
So I do think... I don't think he's got the judgment of his mum. You know, he's not a matriarch. But no. But anyway, so the Comedy Store decided to cancel the Thursday. Very short notice, but fine. And then the Friday, I was hosting. So I was first over the top. Yeah. We were all backstage like, what's it going to be like?
Man? And the store is an audience that might be upset about...
Well, it's quite a sort of, you know, it's, I'd say, a more... not mature is the wrong word. There's loads of young people, but it's a bit more, slightly more of a mainstream audience.
Professionals.
Than the young, sort of mad, pissed up, top secret crowd sort of Essex, Kent crowd that you get in up the creek or the boat or like, you know, every main big gig in London has got a slightly different audience. So I think we didn't know what it was going to be like. And then there was talk that we were going to it was mentioned from management, like, you know, maybe would you do some sort of round of applause? And I was like, no, let's not do that. Let's not make it weird. You know what I mean? So we decided just to see what happened. And it ended up being so funny. Like, I went out at the top and there definitely was a vibe in the room of, is he going to mention it?
Yeah.
And I just straight away just like, oh, guys, thanks for coming out on this totally normal weekend for comedy in London. That got a laugh. And I just went, I think you lot should be fucking ashamed of yourselves for coming out to laugh when our queen is dead. And it got a massive laugh and it was just fair game. We weren't ripping the shit, but it was so much. It was one of the most fun gigs I've ever done. Like the atmosphere was incredible. It was almost like this release of like, oh, yeah, we can just laugh about whatever.
Yeah,
it was really funny.
I think I was always trying to make fun of the people who were doing insane stuff. Like those people who were going, oh, look, that cloud looks like because she's white as well.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, people have lost their collective minds. So.
Oh, and people leaving marmalade sandwiches at Buckingham Palace?
Fucking donuts. Like, it's so like, some people just... I don't understand anyone who... I understand people that sort of liked the Queen. I get it. That is absolutely fine. But people who like the monarchy, I do not understand at all. That makes no sense. Unless you're a billionaire, why would you possibly have any interest in the monarchy? It is a piss take.
It is weird.
It's a stain on our society. That
it's embarrassing.
Where we have hundreds of thousands of homeless people across the country, across the UK... Yeah. That they have
killing.
Countless.
It's a stain on the country.
You cannot cut me off there, man. Should we cut the public episode right at that moment? But while there are palaces, you know, lying empty because that's where they just spend that part.
And inheritance tax? Did you see that?
No inheritance tax.
I think that's
because technically...
It would just go back to her.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do think actually that is not a loophole just made for Prince Charles. I think it's something to do with the fact that they're technically state-owned, not personal-owned.
Right.
So it's something to do with that, I think. I don't think that is as black and white.
So he moves into Buckingham Palace, or did he live there anyway?
I don't know, actually.
Just changes rooms.
Well, he is.
It's the big room.
Drags his bed.
goes into the big bedroom.
TV in my room. Nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think.
But he's moving. He said he's moving his offices to Buckingham Palace, and he's sacked a pile of staff from his old residence.
Well, this is the thing. I just don't think he's got the. You know, the thing with Charles is there's a lot of bad. You know, he's got loads of bad past, hasn't he?
Yeah.
What's he done?
Well, like, you know, I think some people still don't like him for fucking over Diana. You know, like he basically was banging Camilla behind her back. Mm. And obviously when she found out, he got his mum to kill her.
This is still public episode, right?
I think we're now on Patreon.
this is breaking news episode.
So you've got the Diana thing.
I got it here first.
I still think there's a big chunk of people that don't like him for what he did to Diana.
There's an interesting, I don't understand how people bring it together in their minds that they love Diana and love the Queen. I think that's a lot of people. But how could you possibly love both of those simultaneously?
Yeah, I know. It doesn't make any sense. But my mum was like, an Irish woman who loved Diana. Like since we've been clearing out the flat and stuff, like I'm finding boxes.
Diana.
But it's like, I've got found like boxes of just newspaper cuttings about Diana.
Wow.
Like she was a psychopath, planning to murder her. But
there's a good Christopher Hitchens documentary on YouTube about Diana. He didn't like her.
Really?
It's interesting.
What was his thoughts?
He just thought that the country mourning over her, and she was, you know, basically Kim Kardashian kind of vibe. She did nothing for anyone.
Is that weird?
She kind of flirted.
I suppose there is a couple of things she did that, when you put them in the context of the time, were quite big. Like when she shook that guy with AIDS's hand.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, well, because that doesn't sound
should
like a big thing.
Should have sucked his dick.
I want to do something good, mate. Nosh him off.
Get on your knees, princess.
At the time when that was still when we were in sort of like people were scared to sit on toilet seats in public toilets because they thought they'd catch AIDS off.
Yeah, it was just so unknown.
I mean, scared now. Like.
Yeah, for a different.
Put tissue around it.
Monkeypox.
Oh yeah.
But I think there was something she did that on paper were quite big, but she still was a royal. Fucking, yeah, they're all inbred and shit.
She was a sweet ting as well.
She was fit, innit?
Yeah.
And that's the thing that blows my mind.
Parents race was quite good, wasn't it?
What was that?
She ran in the parents race at a
The mum's race at a sports day.
She won it, didn't she?
Yeah, of course. It's a fix.
Yeah.
Comparing her to Camilla, like, just on, you know, that is a drop off.
Queen consort.
So Camilla's not done anything bad though, is she?
Well, apart from, you know, banging Charles behind Princess.
But wasn't Diana doing that with that rugby player? Do you remember that?
Will Carling
was slamming the princess.
And obviously, there's talk of Harry, you know, not being Charles's son.
Yeah, looks a bit like that.
But apparently, the Camilla thing was ongoing. That was throughout their relationship from early doors. There's a story that he banged Camilla on his wedding day with Diana. Like so, and all them stories.
My man, Charlie, the king is back. That's why I've been calling him King for years.
Yes, King.
I think there's the group of people that don't like him about the Diana stuff.
Yeah.
Then there's the weird. There's a conservative people that don't like him because he's an environmentalist.
Bizarre.
And he's very outspoken about in the environment.
Been a tree
about climate.
For years,
and he's all about. He's talks openly about climate change and it's. Well, he's the worrying aspects of it. And then there's also, there is obviously that group of people that think obviously know like about his, you know, he was best mates with fucking Savile and all that, wasn't he? He's covered up loads of pedo stuff, isn't it? There was Savile, what was it? His godfather, Lord Mountbatten, was a known sex offender.
His brother.
And there was also that priest, not the archbishop, but he was like one of the high priests in the Church of England that he helped sort of, you know, basically hush up some... Well, a lot of sex crimes.
Yeah.
So he's, yeah. And
Not all bad.
I don't think he was doing it because he loves pedos. I think they were just like some of his closest circle happened to have been pedophile rapists.
Yeah.
And he helped to use his influence. So I think there's a lot of different angles that people dislike him for. Yeah. So I don't think he's going to, I think there's going to be growing like discussions about, should we start thinking about this as a concept? Sure. Which would be good. It'd be fucking well exciting if we got rid of it. Imagine we had a referendum on getting rid of the monarchy.
Ooh. I think fans of the royal family will stay fans, though, wouldn't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they could literally fucking fuck a kid.
Start beheading
on the
people.
Roof of Buckingham Palace, and there'd be people going, well, you know, they sort of, I don't, they bring in a lot of money for tourism.
People were so angry at that Scottish guy for shouting and for heckling Prince Andrew and the Royal Mail. It's like, hey, who hasn't been heckled on the Royal Mail?
I've come back from the fringe, mate. Got heckled everywhere. What I find. Right, that's the end of this week's public episode. We hope you enjoyed it. What happens now, Julian?
They can, if they want to hear the rest of the episode, they can go over to patreon.com/wearetvi.
There you go. Once you've signed up there, you can hear the rest of the episode. You can hear all the old Patreon episodes, exclusives, whatever.
It's 45p a week.
Is it? Is it? Mm. That's cool. Mm. I didn't know that.
Easy life.
There we go. It's even cheaper than I thought. So do that. And but if not, don't worry. You can listen to next week's public episode when it's released. Thanks.
Thank you. Love you. You're actually changing the podcast. I think you're... 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 I think you